Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.
Everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenue to Minor League Podcast. I am Steve Sipa, and I'm joined by Lucas Vallejos and Ken Levin. How's it, guys? How's it going?
All right.
Pretty good.
My fantasy football team is winning in the semifinals, so everything's good.
Always important.
Yep. Truly the utmost importance, you know.
Yeah. A lot of important things happened today to segue to promote trade and extend, and it was actually really hard to like pick one thing. A lot of influential people were born, a lot of people died, a lot of stuff that have like, you know, huge impact on world history happened. Oliver Cromwell, he became Lord Protector of Britain, Battle of the Bulge happened, the Chinese entered the Korean War, John Gotti became the Don of the Gambino crime family. Catherine of Aragon was born. Beethoven, Jane Austen, Colonel Sanders died. A lot of big things.
Yeah, where you talk about that, that's nuts.
But I guess the most relevant to us as Americans is that the Boston Tea Party happened in 1773. And that's a nice, easy topic. Don't have to go through mental gymnastics to kind of figure anything out. So, there's a bazillion different kinds of tea out there, herbal infusions that technically aren't tea, but close enough, whatever. So I'm not going to list specific ones, but all of the different kinds of tea out there and herbal infusions and whatever else, what tea are we going to promote? What are we going to extend and what are we going to trade?
Oh, okay.
For me, I'm trading chai tea because I just hate chai tea.
What?
It's gross.
Wait. Are you just saying each of us are going to choose three, or are you going to give us three options here?
No. Whatever you want. There's just a bazillion out there. I can't just narrow it down to just three different kinds of tea.
Do I know three?
Extend Earl Grey, promote green tea, and trade most herbal teas.
I also promoted green tea. It's, you know. It's a solid contributor, not the best, but you could always count on it.
All right, let me think for a moment here. I'm gonna extend chai tea because chai tea is fucking delicious. You're just wrong. You're just wrong. Objectively. Promote. What's another tea? Like I have my trade, but I can't think of another tea that I like more than just okay. This is tea that I would want to promote. I guess green tea is fine. I don't want to say iced tea because that's not really tea. That's totally cheating. I'll promote green tea. Green tea is pretty good. I'm going to trade Lapsang tea because I like some smokiness, but Lapsang is just like walking into it, like dunking your head in a southern barbecue smoker and not in a good way.
Yeah, there's a bunch of things that seem extremely gross tea-wise, but I've just never had, so I can't really, like, objectively trade it. Like, butter tea. Butter tea sounds gross, but...
What the hell is butter tea?
It's like Himalayan tea that it's basically...
What the hell?
Tea that's brewed, like a tea concentrate almost, and then just kind of poured into butter, and then it's, like, salty and creamy and thick.
That actually sounds interesting.
It's good for like nutritionally for like the Himalayan people. It's very fatty and has a lot of energy and stuff, but I can't imagine the taste would be particularly good, especially if it's, you know, yak butter. It just doesn't.
Yeah, they don't have cows. That sounds interesting. That sounds like something I'd like, so.
It's like on my list of things to try, but I don't imagine that it would be
Just go to your local neighborhood purveyor of yak butter.
Yeah. I'm sure it'll be extremely fresh because there's lots of yak farms here in the U.S.
God.
All right. Yeah, so. Well, the Rule 5 draft came and went. And as expected, the Mets didn't do anything because the 40-man roster was already full. And then they signed Michael Wacha and Rick Porcello. So even if they were interested in shedding some of that marginal weight on the roster, it was going to those two guys anyway. So they didn't lose anyone, which is good. A couple of players that could have been selected, Shervin Newton and Harold Gonzalez. You know, the odds of them being taken were kind of slim. And, you know, it would have been sucky if either one of those guys were taken, but not, like, devastating or anything. At the minor league level, there was some action in the Rule 5 draft. The Mets lost Jason Crizan. He was selected by Oakland. And they gained a player. They selected Adam Aller, who is a right-handed pitcher, and he was part of the Giants organization. So Aller is, I'm not familiar with football at all, really. But Greg Koch, that's his nephew. He was a guard for Green Bay and then the Vikings and the Dolphins in like the 70s and 80s. So, you know, he played football in high school, baseball in high school, and, he eventually graduated in 2013, went to Northwestern State. He was a pretty solid pitcher there. Really good numbers, but this stuff is kind of like, eh. Then he was drafted by the Pirates in 2016, 20th round, $70,000 signing bonus. He was okay at first, but then as he started going the full season ball, the numbers just, you know, fell off a cliff because his stuff is not really that great. So he played in the Frontier League at the beginning of the season. He was playing for the Windy City Thunderbolts, and then the Giants signed him out of Indy Ball, and they signed him to Augusta, which is their low A affiliate. Numbers, again, were okay, nothing special, and now he is with the Mets, assigned to Syracuse.
Wait. You're telling me that the Mets' obsession with indie ball pitchers is so great, they drafted an indie ball pitcher in the Rule 5 draft?
Pretty much. They, love them so much that they're not even signing them directly. They are taking other guys as indie guys now, too.
Holy Christ.
Yeah, so I'm not too optimistic. He kind of struggled in low A and high A, so I don't really know how well he's going to do in triple A, especially with this juice ball. But, you know, even without a juice ball, that an 87 to 90 mile per hour fastball is not going to be
very thin margin for error.
Yeah. And the command is good. That's good for him that he doesn't walk too many guys, but a below average fastball and then, you know, whatever, serviceable slider and changeup, it's pretty uninspiring profile. Not going to be missing many bats.
I know Ken and I talked about this, but has there ever been a player of any significance selected in the minor league portion of the Rule 5 draft? I'm pretty sure there hasn't been.
I mean, I don't know. I'm sure there have been guys that have since gone on to actually make it to the majors. And maybe have some degree of success, but I mean, definitely not like major acquisitions or anything like that. But I really don't know without having all those numbers and info in front of me. Probably not. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
So yeah, he is in Syracuse. He's going to be in that bullpen. And in additional news, the Mets signed a couple of other minor leaguers to fill in the Syracuse and Binghamton roster. They signed shortstop Max Moroff, left fielder Jarrett Parker, and right-handed pitcher Pedro Payano. Moroff, he was a big overslot guy a couple of years ago. He was drafted by the Pirates in 2012. He was signed for $300,000 in the 16th round at a Trinity Prep in Florida. And it took him a couple of years to develop, but he had a kind of a breakout season in 2015 in Double A. He hit 293, 347, 409 in 136 games, which is pretty good. Wasn't able to keep up that pace though, and you know, the Pirates invested a lot of time in him. He spent some time in their major league roster. The results weren't good. Basically, over 84 games in 3 years, he hit 193, 293, 331. So they gave him plenty of looks. And after the 2018 season ended, they packaged him along with Jordan Lupau to Cleveland, and Lupau broke out, but Moroff didn't. And, you know, it's a kind of bland profile. He's a hit over power guy, and the hit tool really isn't that great either.
How's the defense?
Defensively, he's like a utility kind of guy. He could play any infield position. He's a okay range, and his arm is about average, nothing special. So he's mainly like a second baseman, but when you need him to play short or third base for, you know, a few games or dude is injured, whatever, he can kind of slide in there.
Well, Brody apparently said they are very high on him, which, and given the fact that they have no money to spend, that seems to me to suggest that they're going to put him on the opening day bench, which is going to be real bad.
Yeah, his one bright spot, I guess, he's kind of like a pesky hitter. Like, he'll work the count, he'll make the pitcher throw a lot of pitches, he'll draw some walks. That's useful, but he strikes out a lot, there's not too much power, the hit tool is kind of so there's a bazillion other guys, free agents or in-house guys, I would have more confidence than Moroff.
He's also already 26.
Yeah, all these guys are, you know, minor league free agents, so they're on the older side of 25.
I don't know why they went with Moroff instead of just bringing back Pickles.
Yeah, that's another thing, is that all these guys are, I would say, decidedly downgrades as compared to the guys they're losing in minor league free agency. So, I don't know. I guess it's because a lot of the guys that they signed last year, Gregor Blanco, Rajai Davis, they're kind of like quadruple A fringe major leaguers that, you know, could have and in some cases did get shots at the major league level again, whereas these guys, barring, like you said, the organization seeing a lot more in them than we do, these guys probably are not going to be getting major league time. But who knows? So Jarrett Parker, he was another guy that was kind of highly thought of back in the day that never really panned out. He was drafted by the Giants. He was the second rounder in 2010. And for a couple of seasons in the mid-2010s, he was like a mid-level Giants prospect. But he developed real slowly. Always was a little bit on the older side in relation to the league, so kind of made it hard to judge in that regard. But he hit well in the PCL in 2015, and then he got a cup of coffee at the end of the year in San Francisco, and he hit, like, amazing, actually. He hit, in September, 347, 407, 755 with six homers, so.
I vaguely remember that, like, getting hype around this dude at that point.
Yeah, the name sounded familiar. But he just didn't really stick. You know, he was up and down in 2016, 2017, never was able to get much traction. They released him right before the 2018 season. He missed all of that year. And then he was signed by the Angels last year. And he spent most of the season in the PCL. And he was just okay. And, you know, in the PCL, when you're a power guy like he is, you want to, you know, do really good. And he was just okay, which is kind of a red flag, I guess. You know,
it seems very left-handed Travis Tyrone.
Yeah, I think he's a little bit of a better hitter than Tyrone, but he's definitely a power over hit guy. Lots of strikeouts, you know, big swings, so lots of strikeouts. I think he's also a better fielder than Tyrone. You know, he can actually still play the outfield, whereas Tyrone, it didn't seem that way because they were exclusively playing him at first base. As we've mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I think I would rather see Tyrone signed and retained in the organization than them going out and getting a similar guy. But I hope he is not Tyrone's replacement. Mm. But it's, you know, they definitely fit the same kind of profile. So, and then the last guy, and I guess the most interesting of all of them, is Pedro Payano. He was actually born here in New York, but he moved back to the DR where his parents are from, and he grew up there. And then as a result, he qualified for international free agency. So back in 2012, the Rangers signed him. They gave him a $650,000 signing bonus. And it took him a really long time to develop. He spent 3 full years in their DSL team and then played there part of a fourth before finally coming stateside. Self-admittedly, in an interview, he said that it was because he has, quote, a short mind and had a lot of growing up to do back then. So, I mean, I guess self-reflection is good, but I don't know. But he made his stateside debut in 2015, and since then he was, you know, okay to very good at basically every level that he pitched until 2018 when he made it to Double A. And, you know, Double A is usually the point of you know, where you can tell who has the chops to cut it. And, you know, he didn't really have the chops to cut it. And he became a free agent at the end of the 2018 season. He re-signed with Texas for 2019, and they sent him back to Double A. Again, he wasn't that effective. They promoted him to Triple A, was even less effective. And he actually threw 22 innings in the majors and, you know, was equally poor. The stuff is solid, though. So maybe there's the chance that, you know, a chance of scenery or something will help him out and something will click. The fastball is okay. Maybe average, a little bit above average for right hands, are low to mid 90s, tops out about 94, has a little cutting and sinking movement to it. And he complements it with a slider, changeup, curveball, mostly slider and changeup, and gets a lot of ground balls. But, you know, you look at other guys in the system, it's just a lot of the same, I guess, you know. Nothing really strikes out, sticks out, and makes you say, like, this guy might, you know, actually be a candidate to succeed now.
Do you think they'll have him start or relieve at AAA?
I guess it really depends on how the team kind of formats between now and opening day.
And who's going to be in that AAA rotation?
It's going to be like Peterson, possibly Colome.
Harrell.
Oswalt's still around?
Oh, yeah, Oswalt's still around. Yep. He has options, right?
Probably.
Okay, so Oswalt.
Look on Cots.
In an ideal world, they assign enough relievers that they can option Gazelman to start, but we all know that won't happen. Bring back Mickey Giannis. Giannis, whatever.
He's a free agent, and hopefully they sign him and send him back to Double A so he can continue his dominance as being the best Rumble Pony pitcher in history. Especially if the Rumble Ponies are going to disappear after the season.
Well, his record will be safe forever.
Yeah.
Corey Oswalt has one option remaining.
All right, so he'll be in the minors then. So Payano's probably a swingman for Syracuse in that case?
Yeah, I mean, he's a fine guy to have, but I don't think there's really much you can count on.
Now, I believe I saw this from someone in the Slack that Phil Regan was his coach in the Dominican Winter League this year. So I wonder if that probably played some role in them signing him.
Yeah, I mean, if there's familiarity with him, that seems to be a big Brody Van Wagenen thing, signing guys with familiarity or trading for guys. Speaking of trades, there was a pretty big trade that went down, and the Mets were not anywhere nearby. Corey Kluber was traded, And he was traded for not much.
He's traded for almost nothing, it feels like.
And if there's one thing the Mets have in their system that they could give up, it is almost nothing.
Take our particular brand of almost nothing. Yeah. Instead of the Rangers brand of almost nothing.
So who would be the equivalent in a Corey Kluber trade if the Mets somehow lucked into making a deal with the Indians here?
So they don't really have the high-end reliever. Lucas, if you want to.
Yeah, I mean, it's Delino, whatever. DeShields and Emmanuel Chase. DeShields is a bad fourth outfielder who hits lefties okay. And Chase is a potentially really special relief prospect, but a relief prospect. I'm pretty sure they could have traded, like, Jake Marisnik, and he'd be the better outfielder, and then, like, Franklin Killamy? Oh, no, they don't have good...
David Peterson, maybe? Just give a starter instead of a reliever?
That would be a nice upgrade, going from Peterson to Kluber.
Yeah, no kidding. Or, you know, how about just give them Andrés Giménez, who is, like, three tiers better than...
Yeah, who would top both about. Of the players.
By a wide margin.
Significant margin, yep.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, look, Corey Kluber has some worrying trends in his velocity over the last couple of years, but he's still been plenty effective. Last year's 35 innings while he was injured, notwithstanding. And his contract is basically 236 or 37.
He's doable. Should be doable.
With the second year being an option. So, like, if he really is totally borked, it's 118. Like, I don't know. I feel like even in the Mets' very bad system, they could have been in on this. And, like, maybe the medicals are totally, completely bad on Kluber, like, worse than everyone knows, but... I'm a little annoyed that they let this opportunity pass them by.
Yeah, I mean trades are always it's always kind of one of those things where not having all the information in front of us, we don't know, you know, certain things, whatever. But if he was available and all the Mets needed to do in order to acquire him were give up two minor leaguers of similar profiles, then there's no reason they should not have been all on top of that.
He won the Cy Young in 2017, right? I think 2017.
I think so.
All right, so even if you assume he doesn't get back to 2017 levels and he's more at 2018 or 2016 or 2015 levels, those were all still 5-win pitching seasons.
Right, like a lot of people will say, a lot of the people that, how can I phrase this? We don't have problems trading minor leaguers or prospects when it's a good trade. The problem is when you're making kind of stupid, nonsensical trades. Even if you gave up a guy like Andrés Giménez, who again is probably a lot more valuable than any of the guys that are going to the Indians that are from Texas, he's a pretty high level prospect. But you're giving him up for a bona fide major league pitcher with experience. And yes, there's some red flags because of his injury problems in the past. But, you know, the upside is you're getting a Cy Young caliber pitcher for a couple of years.
I mean, just think about the opportunity cost here, right? Like, Cole and Strasburg – Cole is definitely better. Strasburg is almost certainly better unless Kluber bounces back in a big way. Right? But he's also better than literally every other pitcher on the market, and he is available for less than 2 years and $40 million. That's the kind of asset you trade for, not a fourth outfielder.
Yes, exactly.
It's like, whatever, Mets.
Well, Mets are gonna Met.
Enjoy Rick Port. You'll get Rick Porcello and Michael Wacha, and you'll like it.
Yes, you will.
Will we, though? Will we?
Well, let's take a break and meditate on that one for a few minutes.
Oh, God.
Well, we'll be right back after this.
This episode is sponsored by Stash, a smarter, simpler way to start investing. With Stash, you can begin investing in a wide array of companies and diversified funds for as little as $5. Stash offers unlimited trading with no add-on trading commissions, so you can invest without worrying about getting nickel and dimed. You can choose your own stocks and funds to build a personalized portfolio or let Stash help build one for you. Stash demystifies investing with personalized financial guidance and education. They can even help you set up a plan for retirement saving. Stash will give you $10 today to get started investing. Just visit www.stash.app with the code SBNation. That's www.stash.app with code SBNation to get your $10 to start investing on Stash. Investment advisory services offered by Stash Investments LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. For disclosures and to learn how to claim your $10 to invest, visit www.stash.app.
Hey, I'm Jason Del Rey. I recently wrapped up Land of the Giants, The Rise of Amazon. In this podcast, we examine how Jeff Bezos turned a small online bookseller into one of the most powerful companies in the world. We start by exploring how Amazon Prime became a service with over 100 million members and the main source of the company's power.
I mean, I think that's kind of what Amazon's banking on, right? That you're just so locked in that you're going to go to any other sites because, I mean, I don't.
And we end the season by pondering the question, is Amazon too big?
You know, and we just don't want to be the United States of Amazon. We just really don't.
Land of the Giants has been recommended by the New York Times, Axios, Wired, and more. It's a candid look at the state of Amazon today, how we got here, and what the future might look like. The entire first season is out now. Find out more and binge it on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Steve Saipa, and I'm joined by Lucas Vlahos and Ken Levin. And the winter meetings just wrapped up. And as all of you Amazing Avenue listeners should know, if you've been listening to Lucas and Ken's podcast, the Mets didn't really do anything too groundbreaking or interesting. But there was a lot going on in the winter meetings, in addition to the Rule 5 draft and all those big free agent signings. There were the ongoing negotiations between Major League Baseball and the National Association of Minor League Clubs.
And also Bernie Sanders.
Yes, Bernie Sanders is getting involved. Basically they sat down to negotiate the plan that MLB said was happening next year, that 42 teams be contracted and multiple leagues eliminated and others changed around dramatically, and negotiations understandably haven't gone particularly well. Rob Manfred, ironically, is accusing minor league representatives of having a take it or leave it attitude when Major League Baseball is in fact the side that is saying these changes are going to happen and there's nothing nobody can do about it. So too bad. But, basically nothing got done and all the same points of contention are still the same points of contention. And, to me, the most annoying part about this current, snafu right now is that MLB is feigning concern about, the couple of things that they've mentioned. And in a lot of cases, it's, not actually a problem, or it's, the problem that has been addressed and dealt with to some degree, or is an issue that is actually on Major League Baseball and not even, minor league baseball. Biggest thing, obviously, is facilities. And, some aren't that great. Either, the actual, let's say, play surface, the stands, the inside, like, clubhouse stuff itself, whatever. But there are, as far as I know, no teams, no stadiums that are outright, dangerous or anything like that, And it's not like MLB has any, you shouldn't throw stones at glass houses. How often do we see the Oakland A's stadium, covered in sewage from?
Yeah, I was going to say, how many minor league stadiums have filled up with sewage in the last right. half decade?
I mean, I'm sure plenty have, but it's just not newsworthy, But it's just, And in some cases, stuff like that are just outright lies. We know that the Rumble ponies are being targeted to, you know, disappear mostly out of convenience because of, you know, where they're located, where the Cyclone's located, and obviously what team the owners prefer. But we know that they upgraded their facilities. They are in compliance with, you know, all Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball audits. And how can you, and, you know, how can you say that we're going to, you know, make this team go away because of their facilities are not great when we know objectively that they are, they're past, and everything was good according to those same people that are saying now that it's not okay. It's just very hypocritical.
It seems
food. Oh, go ahead.
It seems that, you know, like honestly, I don't think there are any good actors on either side of this, right? Like, even the current system as is sucks for minor leaguers, and Major League Baseball won't fix that. Minor League Baseball won't fix that. This just feels like two groups bickering over money mostly. And MLB is definitely more in the wrong, but I don't know that I have that much sympathy for minor league owners who get a huge benefit from hosting. Like, the system as a whole just kind of sucks for the actual people who have to play the games, I think.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it all comes back down to pay. And, you know, as we and many other places were talking about, you know, a few months ago when that kind of became the hot button topic, like, just pay your minor leaguers more than minimum wage, pay them a living salary, and a lot of this stuff will not be an issue. Something they've brought up is, like, you know, the not quality food and not quality housing situation that these guys are living in. Again, you know what fixes that? Better pay. They can eat healthier. They don't have to live in hotels. They don't have to live, you know, six, seven guys living in a two-bedroom, three-bedroom apartment. And with that, I think that Major League Baseball is being greedy. Because if you peek behind the curtain, you know, Major League Baseball is saying all this stuff. And really, when it comes down to pay, Major League Baseball is looking for the minor league teams to chip in more to pay those minor leaguers. And, you know, it just, the burden should not fall on the minor league teams to play these guys because.
Absolutely.
It was agreed upon in whatever the agreement was years ago that they are Major League Baseball employees, not minor league baseball employees. So why should the minor league clubs have to be chipping in for the extra pay when we know that these major league organizations and owners are the billionaires? And in most cases, even the minor league teams that are owned by kind of big conglomerates, most of them are not extremely, you know, comparatively anyway to the major league owners and everything. And it's just a big money and power imbalance there.
Yeah, the money we're talking about is like a rounding error for big league teams.
Absolutely. It's
like a sizable portion of the operating budget for minor league teams. So.
Mm-hmm. And Rob Manfred issued a statement not that long, a few days ago. And I think that, you know, if you read between the lines, it shows exactly what Major League Baseball is interested in, and that's saving, you know, these pennies and dimes.
Mm-hmm.
Because his solution, if, you know, nothing gets resolved and they do cram these changes through and there's massive whatever, these things that he's saying are not going to fix the problems. His quote is, "If the National Association of Minor League Clubs has an interest in an agreement with Major League Baseball, it must address the very significant issues with the current system at the bargaining table. Otherwise, MLB owners will be free to affiliate with any minor league team or potential team in the United States, including independent teams and cities that are not permitted to compete for and affiliate under the current agreement." So basically what he's saying is that they're going to make up their own teams or contract, you know, teams in...
We'll make our own minor leagues with blackjack and hookers. In fact, screw the minor league teams and the blackjack. Ah, screw the whole thing.
But basically, you know, if the actual problem is stadiums and facilities, who do you think has the better stadium and facilities? Is it these minor league ball clubs that, yes, some of them are not the best, but they've been affiliated with major league teams for years? Or, you know, the Sussex County Miners in the Frontier League in playing in Skyland Stadium? You know, I'm inclined to believe that the teams that are already affiliated with Major League Baseball have the better.
I feel like there are issues on both sides here, right? Like, there are no way, I think we're all in agreement on this, there's no way the minor league teams should be responsible for playing these people. The major league teams should pay them. We've gone over this issue ad nauseum. I don't think that's changed. I'm also sure there are some facilities that suck, and if you're a minor league team and you are getting the benefit of being associated with a major league team, I'm sure there's some facilities that need to be improved. And then the other issue that I'm sure is just a smokescreen for the real actual monetary bullshit on the bottom of it, but I do think is a fair critique of the current minor league system, is the travel issue.
Agreed.
Like, I don't know how you solve that under the current system, but I also don't trust that either of these sides are negotiating in good faith to say, hey, this is a problem, let's make it better. They're just using that as cover for, well, that's a problem, so we're going to actually contract the whole system.
Mm-hmm.
What?
And if they do adopt, I mean, it sounds like he meant for just basically saying that they'll take over, you know, just how they took over the Atlantic League, that they'll contract, you know, the American Association or the Frontier League, you know, places that already have some infrastructure in place, and they'll make those the official minor leagues. Those places are not, you know, they are not any better when it comes to your travel problems. You know, it's a pain in the ass to go from Southern Illinois, where the Southern Illinois Miners are located, mm-hmm. to Quebec, where the Quebec Capitales are located, you know.
Like, there definitely needs to be a solution for that. Like, that's ridiculous.
Right. And, like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like maybe you have – I mean, you can – like, I don't know. I feel like the solution is adding more teams and – or keeping things more local when it comes to the schedule, you know. I know, like, with the South Atlantic League, most of the teams are south of Maryland, in the Georgias, and then you have Lakewood all the way up here, which kind of sticks out like a sore thumb. And teams don't, you know, it's not like the teams are going constantly back and forth to Lakewood out of their
way. Yeah, the teams usually come up for a series or two
series. Right, a series or two, and that's
every couple of years. Like,
right, so if when you have leagues with kind of weird geographical imbalances like that, then you need to sit down at the schedule and figure it out. Or, you know, rework things.
So something has to be reworked on that front. I don't know whether it's like committees to control relocation or what the solution is, right? I'm not an expert on this topic. I'm sure there's plenty of people who have thought more about it, right? I'm pretty confident the solution isn't just elite 40 minor league teams.
Yeah, not gonna help things.
Like, and it's very frustrating that you see this topic and you see this issue come up originally, and you're like, wow, okay, maybe some of these actual issues will get addressed, and then very quickly you realize it's devolved into the usual nonsense, non-helpful bickering about money.
Mm-hmm. And you know, minor league baseball has issued statements on the handful of things that Major League Baseball said is a problem. And on the point of team travel, they said, quote, under the current agreement, Major League Baseball teams review and approve travel itineraries for all minor league baseball affiliates. The current agreement has guidelines addressing mileage, commuter trips, and departure arrival times. And, you know, it goes on, but, you know, basically this is, it's been a kind of crappy deal for these minor leaguers, you know, going back and forth on charter buses, miles and miles and miles, long, very long trips. But that's how it's been for years and years, and it's all been approved for Major League Baseball, and it never was a problem in the past. not to kind of appeal to whatever, you know, to that's always how things have been. So it's fine because, yes, like you said, it is a shitty thing. Oops. I can't say that. Oh, it's a crappy thing, but you know, it in the last, you know, contractual re-up between Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball, it was not an issue. The one before that, it was not an issue. The one before that was not an issue. Now all of a sudden it's a major issue to the point that we need to contract 42 teams. Like, come on.
But given that this is the way the MLB seems to negotiate, boy, I can't wait till we have to do a new CBA in a year and a half.
Yeah, things are going to be, the next Get your popcorn, year or two folks. Are going to be, yeah. I mean, who knows? Next season, there might not be any more. You know, we might all be laid off because there might not be any minor leagues.
Yeah. Don't tell Brian. We'll just keep doing the farm reports and the podcast, and we just don't tell anyone. It's fine.
We could try, see how that goes. But yeah, it'll be an interesting next year or two. In Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball.
I'm not particularly optimistic we get a solution that anyone's happy with.
No, and that's the thing. Like, what are they going to do? Is Major League Baseball just going to say, like, well, are they going to actually pull the trigger and do what they're saying, that they're just going to ignore everything that Minor League Baseball is saying and doing and just kind of do their own thing without anyone else's input? Like, I don't know legally. Can they do that? I feel like they can't, but they're acting like they can. And if they do that, then what are the repercussions? I mean, there's probably all kinds of lawsuits. There's, I don't know. And as we mentioned before, you know, politicians are getting involved and, you know, at the local level, you know, all these teams are having their local politicians, mayors, congresspeople, whoever, you know, involved in protecting them. And, you know, we have, you know, guys, you know, on the national level, like Bernie Sanders saying, you can't do this. And it just, I don't know. It just, baseball is entangled in local and national politics, very much so. And it'll be interesting how this all goes down and shakes up.
How much are minor league stadiums subsidized a lot of the time, like major league stadiums, or is that not as common?
Yes, they. I want to say that they are even more so, because I know one of the, not issues, but when Binghamton was having their press conference about how their stadium is up to par and everything, a big sticking point was that their owner, I want to say his name is John Hughes, that he invested a lot of his own personal money in improving the stadium, which is owned by the city of Binghamton or whatever. So. Mm-hmm.
So you'd expect lots of like local politicians who just maybe approved investments in these stadiums to not be so happy when MLB rips their team away.
Right. Look at Kingsport. The last couple of years, they've been investing in rezoning and creating a new entertainment complex in what used to be a quarry, I believe, or some kind of chemical thing. I don't know, but. And basically, they were looking to build a new stadium for the Kingsport Mets. And not ironically, one Sterling Equities was involved in all of the real estate dealings down there.
Hmm.
And, you know, now all of a sudden the Kingsport Mets and the entire Appalachian League is going to go poof. So, yeah, there's got to be a lot of unhappy people. Which is why it just seems very short-sighted. Which is why it just seems that, like, it just can't happen the way that Major League Baseball is saying it's going to happen. Because it just, if you yank the tablecloth, everything, all the dishes on the table are going to fall, and that's going to be a major problem. And there's just too many people getting screwed over for it to actually happen, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, yeah. All right, well, do you guys have any last words for the week?
Who's the next? Who are the Indians going to trade next? Lindor, we don't have enough for that. Damn.
I mean, at the rate that Kluber is traded, we probably do.
Oh, God. I mean, how much... Ahmed Rosario and, like, every prospect in the system, I still wouldn't take that for Lindor, but maybe the Indians do. So give them a call and see what they say.
Hey, don't hurt to ask now.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right, well, if anyone has any questions or comments, you can send us an email at our email address from complexthequeens@gmail.com. And you can follow us on Twitter and shoot questions there. I'm at Steve Sipa. Lucas is at ElVajos343. And Ken is at KenLavin91. And you can subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from and rate and review them. And we will be back next week. Have not decided the topic yet, but it's Christmas, so, and Hanukkah, and so
Christmas
maybe we'll,
Hanukkah.
Yeah, so maybe we can see what kind of Mets gifts we get. I don't know, but whatever we talk about next week, I don't know, we'll be here. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.
Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.